On it goes. A slow downward spiral. Drifting further and further. WFOD begins now.
Oh no! Put me back in! Put me back in, please! Buddy, let go of my head and put me back inside! Ah! It's a oh! Who is that? Who's that? Ah! Who are you? Oh no!
Guys, hello and welcome to the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks Internet Radio Program. I am Mike. I am joined, of course, by my good friend and co-host, Mr. Drunkard STL.
Thank you.
Also joining us via Skype, the king of pranks, the albino alligator popcorn bitch, Travis Hulse. Hello, Travis.
Am I not also your very good friend?
I mean, sure, Travis.
Which is funny because me and him are actually not really good friends.
Yeah.
Okay, so Travis is my friend. Drunk's not my friend.
There you go.
Matt's here, guys. And, guys, it's February, which is...
Well, you're going to skip over me? I mean, I need clarification, too.
Matt, we're very good friends.
All right, very good. Okay, thank you.
Guys, it's podcast month. February.
Podcast month.
Podcast month. We do it every... Is this the third or the fourth podcast month?
I feel like it's the fourth annual, right?
It's enough to call it annual, I would say. Annually, February is podcast month. We get very excited for podcast month around here. We are joined by our very good friend, right? Right? Good friend?
Yeah, great friend.
Mike from the Recasting Couch podcast is here, guys. Follow him at Recasting Pod. Mike, are you there, Matt? Mike,
I am, sir. How are you?
I'm great, Mike. I'm new to your podcast. I listened to one the other day. I scrolled back a bit. I listened to Face Off. What Mike? It's your brother, right? You do a show with your brother.
Yeah, my brother and I do a show, and essentially we get very long winded about a particular movie of a week, and then we recast all the roles in it.
It's a deep dive, which I love. I do not have the attention span to do what you guys do, but I mean, like they're like 2.5 hour shows. It's a deep dive into the whole plot of the movie, and you like recast in the Face Off episode I was listening to. You guys were like recasting the prison guards. I mean, you guys go deep.
We do go deep. We enjoy, we call them those kinds of roles and the actors who frequent them, that guys, because they're those guys that you look at and you go, I know that guy. What is it? And then you say his name and you go, oh, right. That guy, he was in that movie. And so we have a whole category of people that we call that guys. Actually, we just did a That Guy Hall of Fame episode, our first annual That Guy Hall of Fame episode a couple weeks ago. And
like a master list of all your that guys?
We don't. That would be a long list. We don't. We have not kept a list. We just have guys that we regularly use because we like them so much. And funny enough, after you do this for long enough, to Chris and I, they're not that guys anymore. We know them by name, but they generally start as guys who play in those like third or fourth leading roles who you've seen a million times and have no idea who they are.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So when you listen to your show, you name a name and then you look it up and you're like, oh shit, yeah.
We try to give you a reference point. We try to give you like another movie that they were in or like their biggest role that you might recognize them from. But some people do like to sit down with their Google out and take a look at these guys.
I haven't listened to the show, but I love the idea. I really enjoy the idea. It sounds like something that I would definitely get into.
We're working on getting them a little bit shorter, but we like the 2 hour mark a lot. We enjoy listening to long form podcasts, so we also enjoy doing them.
We don't go so deep into that when we do. Didn't we? We did Face Off, right? And one of our ex-co-hosts ended up Didn't he do Big Mama as one of the roles, and then what was it?
Yeah, Madea.
Professor Clump. Oh, Madea.
Yeah, it was Madea. Right. So Big Mama and Madea just trade rubber masks, I think, was...
That's right.
Yeah. That would actually be, I might actually watch that.
Well, and you made some, I don't know if it was you or your brother, but you guys made some great observations in Face Off that I hadn't really considered. Like, you said that, in the scene where they swap the faces, they start with the FBI agent and not the bad guy in the coma, which seems yes. stupid. And I
would say that in most cases the good observations are mine, but that particular one was mine because it just struck me as so strange that you would start with the, you know, you wouldn't start with the almost dead guy.
And the other observation that you made that was cracking my shit up was you said that they were cutting his hair while he had a missing face, so
no
like
face,
he had a
right.
giant open wound, and they just had to get his hair cut. They were in a time crunch.
Yes, we try to point out silly things about movies like that. We're not experts or anything like that. We just like to talk shit and have fun. That's kind of what it's all about.
It sounds like the podcast. I can get behind that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I enjoyed it a lot. And so we've done a couple of these recasts, but we don't.
Yeah, I was looking back on your website. I saw you guys have done. It looks like almost an annual thing for you guys.
Yeah. We don't do it often. And Travis casts Sam Rockwell every time.
I have to agree with that casting, and it doesn't really matter where it goes because I try to use Sam Rockwell. I have to limit myself because I think that guy can do just about anything on screen.
I guess you would just go with people that you enjoy seeing.
I watched him in that movie Vice playing George W. Bush, and he was fucking great.
I haven't seen it yet, but just from the commercials, he looks amazing. I mean, Christian Bale looks amazing.
He does the whole thing really well.
Guys, also worth noting, coming up after the break, we're going to be talking to Spooky Dan. Spooky Dan, he made a movie. It's called Sleigh Bells. It's not spelled the way you think. If I say Sleigh Bells and you think Christmas, it's the opposite spelling of both. That's on demand now. Spooky Dan, he's a lovely man. Travis, the fun thing about booking Spooky Dan was they used Spooky just as his first name.
They always just reference Spooky. They said, we'll check Spooky's availability.
Yeah,
it was amazing. Like,
we'll reach out to Spooky and see if Spooky's available.
We have Spooky for you on this date. Will that work out to have Spooky on your show?
But it's
just amazing.
Travis, when we talked to Spooky Dan, spoiler alert, the interview's already happened, so... I can tell you, we do not call Spooky Dan Spooky. I guess, did we chicken out? What happened to us? What?
It seemed unnatural, right? Like, it just seemed unnatural to call him Spooky, even though I know everybody does.
We just called him Dan. I guess we were
Dan
being
the
polite.
Whole time. Yeah, I guess.
So
you should have gone real casual and been like, could just call him Spook.
So,
like you're his boy.
Hey, so Spook.
That's straddling a line, I think.
Yeah.
So the film that Drunk suggested that we recast is Look Who's Talking.
And this is a long time coming. Drunk suggested this months ago.
Well, I was curious. It's the 30th anniversary. I didn't know if that had something to do with it.
Is it Drunk?
Or usually
is it just a coincidence?
Whenever you ask me to find a movie to recast, I'd usually try to find a 20, 25, or 30-year anniversary.
And
did you just Google 30-year-old movies?
Well, usually I like all IMDb movies that came out in 89 or 80.
Oh, okay.
That kind of deal.
And so this was calculated.
It's 89
was a hell of a year.
A remake. It's crazy that this movie hasn't been remade yet, right? I mean, it's a simple enough premise.
They kind of beat the horse, right? Because was there three sequels, two sequels?
And they came out boom, 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 89, 90, 93, so...
Funny enough, did you know that they did not get last names until the third film in the franchise? The first two movies, they just used their first names. They never bothered to give them last names.
Mikey didn't have a last name?
No, Mikey was just Mikey.
He was a bastard child, right? So maybe he didn't have a last name?
Yeah. So
he was a bastard.
Kirstie Alley's role, she is somebody's mistress.
An accountant. She's an accountant, and she's
and
oh, wasn't it Adam Goldberg's grandpa who she slept with in that movie?
I don't know, Travis.
From the Goldbergs? Wasn't it George? Oh, shit. Now I got to look it up. You keep talking. I'm going to look up.
Is he a vet guy? Mike, would that classify the...
I'd have to see who it is. It sounds like he may be.
It's George Segal. Like, he's like a veteran actor. He's in the Goldbergs now as like the grandpa in that show.
Yeah, it's interesting with the that guy thing. Sometimes you go all you go to famous and then come back around to being a that guy.
you live long enough to become a that guy.
Right. Well, you kind of fall out of favor and then you show up in movies in like your 70s and 80s and people are like, oh, I know that guy from something, but he's not famous anymore.
I just recently rewatched The Dark Knight and that reminds me of the Batman line. You either die a hero or live long enough to become the villain. So
hey, there you go.
Travolta, how he gets put into their life is I think he's just randomly using her address for some scam. Like he's trying to show that he's a resident of a certain county for some reason.
His grandpa is getting like Social Security checks or something, and he has them sent to her apartment, I believe.
So he's stealing Social Security checks?
No, his grandpa's still alive.
I
think his grandpa was played by Abe Vigoda, and she catches him going through her mail, and then that's how they hook up.
So this is the only clip I pulled, but this is...
That old tale.
This is their introduction. They essentially meet because he's stealing her mail.
And I don't want to get caught.
Well, you're not going to get caught. Look, I'll do something for you, okay?
Yeah, like what?
Well, I'll babysit.
Oh, come on. You don't know how to take care of a baby.
I do. Look, I practically brought up my sister's kids. I mean, I know a lot about babies.
All right, then. Friday nights.
Ooh, no, I can't do it.
So that is... All that she knows about him is that he steals people's mail.
Right. And he claims to have sisters who have children.
I mean, that was the length of their introduction. Is he's stealing stuff out of her mailbox, and then he says, oh, well, I'll watch your kid. And she says,
I'll watch your kid.
Oh, well, Fridays. Come over.
The 80s were a much simpler time.
They really were.
Trust people.
Right.
Yeah, petty theft is not a big deal.
You could ride your big wheel without a helmet or knee pads. It was great.
Yeah, unless you were driving around in a white van trying to abduct children, you were good to go.
So the only three roles that we're going to bother recasting is the three main roles. Is John Travolta plays James, who his last name is Ubriaco, but you don't know that yet. Molly, who is a mistress, and the voice of the baby is Mikey, played by Bruce Willis.
I find it curious that it took them three movies to get his last name, and they landed on Ubriaco.
Yeah, that's what they said. They're like, okay, we need to make this extra Italian sounding.
I feel like
after all that time, they could have kind of maybe tried a little harder.
I think that John Travolta had actually, he pitched that. That was his idea. He was like, listen, I'll do the third movie, but I need more of a backstory. I need a last name.
That sounds very Travolta.
Yeah, he needed it for depth.
Right.
Yeah. Should we start with Travolta, I guess?
The baby's obviously got to be the last thing, right?
Would probably be the important one, right?
I do have a bonus casting, too.
Oh, okay.
I do
casting.
Well.
Okay, guys, let's hear some bonus casting here.
Oh, you want to do bonus casting now?
Well, yeah.
Okay, we'll let our guest go first. Mike, what do you got for bonus casting?
Well, my probably favorite role in this movie is Grandpa.
Yep.
Played by Abe Vigoda. And so a lot of guys came to mind, but there were two in particular. The first one was Christopher Lloyd, just because it looks kind of like an older version of Christopher Lloyd if he went crazy. But you really, the important part of that role is the eyebrows. And so you had to get a guy with some massively crazy eyebrows and who looks old. And so I actually went with Martin Scorsese.
Nice.
Okay. Oh, that totally works.
Does Martin Scorsese act?
Mean eyebrows.
No, that would do wonders for the movie, too, because if you can say, hey, here's an ancillary role that we got acclaimed director Martin Scorsese to step in and playing grandpa. How amazing.
Don't sell Abe Vigoda short, though. He was Fish. He had his own TV show in the 70s, right?
Well, listen, I would never sell Abe Vigoda short, but the role could have been a little meatier.
Could you somehow, like, loosely tie Scorsese's movies into it? You know how they do, like, from the one of the producers of, and then something popular to sell a piece of shit to you?
Oh, sure.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
How yeah, like from one of the producers of the first Conjuring spinoff.
Like, what gymnastics could you do to somehow tell people from one of the guys who's an actor, but I don't know how to do it. Never mind. It was a bad idea, guys. So, Travis, what's your bonus casting on
that? Travis's bonus casting is Kirstie Alley's best friend in this movie. I feel like it's her conscience throughout the thing. Her name is Rona. Originally played by an actress, her name is Twink Kaplan. But I decided to go gender swap this, and now Kirstie Alley's character's best friend is a very gay Billy Eichner. Like, he's really selling nice. His gayness in this motion picture.
Nice.
And he doesn't trust James.
He doesn't trust James, and he's all about just going out and trying to get laid, just like Rona was in the original flick. Always looking for a man.
I like the casting. I hate Billy Eichner.
I'm not a huge fan either.
Yeah, I'm not either.
I like when he goes out on the street and yells at people.
I hate when he goes out on the street.
You don't like
and yells
when he? I mean, I don't like him when he acts and things. But
this
I like,
is Chris Pratt. You know Chris Pratt.
Yeah. Oh, I just watched that yesterday and just chills.
The idea of that show is kind of okay, but the execution's poor. I can't watch that guy.
That show probably costs like $3 to make.
$3, yeah.
That would be really funny if Billy Eichner tripped every time he walked away from somebody.
Drunk, no bonus casting?
No bonus casting for me.
Okay, so James Ubriaco, guys, originally played by John Travolta in this remake. I went with Jason Statham.
Wow.
Wow.
Hey, he's got comedic chops.
And Travis, every time Jason Statham is in a comedy, he's great in it.
He is great. Yeah, I agree.
I think that like if the baby peed on him or something, he'd make fun faces and I just like Jason Statham.
He'd always be calling the woman a cunt, and we'd all love it.
Is that a thing he does?
Well, he's British.
Well, yeah. They're very loose with that word.
Would he drive like the station wagon really fast with like the car seat?
Yeah, he's yeah, like, absolutely.
I believe Travolta's Jimbery job in that movie is a taxi driver. So,
I think he is a taxi driver.
Right,
you're right.
I think he's trying
to be a pilot.
This would be pretty great if the whole movie was centered around his character in Transporter. So he just happened into this.
He just stops by to babysit the kid once in a while on the way to transporting shit.
Right.
I can get behind that.
Matt, do you have somebody for the role of James?
I do. I'm going with the Paul Rudd.
Paul nice. Rudd.
That's my pick.
The ageless Solid Paul casting. Rudd. Yeah.
The ageless Paul Rudd. I think Paul Rudd funny. Old enough to fit into this role. These are what? Like supposed to be 30s-ish people.
Yeah, Kirstie Alley and John Travolta, I think she was 38 and he was 36 when they made this movie.
Yeah, yeah, the good thing about Paul Rudd is I think you could probably get away with casting someone opposite him that's like ranging from 25 to 60 and he'll probably look fine next to you.
Yeah. All believable.
Travis, James.
James, originally played by John Travolta, for this role, I went with Jake Johnson of New Girl fame.
Oh, okay.
Big fan of Jake Johnson, and I know Travolta wore a bunch of aviators in this Look Who's Talking, and slap a pair of aviators on Jake Johnson, and he looks pretty good. I think he's got the sarcasm, the charm. It all works.
Well, I don't think
I like him a lot.
I don't think any of our castings we could go with the last name Ubriaco. We'd probably have to change his last name.
Well, we'll do the Jesse Katsopolis Cochran thing. We'll just switch it up.
Drunk.
No big deal.
Yeah. So whenever we go back and do these things, I tend to look at age and their kind of status as they were at the time. John Travolta was the tippy top of the A-lists in 1989, would you say?
Sure, yeah.
So with that being said, I went with Ryan Gosling on this particular role.
Wow.
You know, I thought about that. That hits my mark. Drunk. Good job.
Is he too cool for that role?
I don't know.
He's
I don't think so.
He's too slick.
He's no. You watch that movie that he made with Steve Carell and was Emma Stone, Steve Carell's daughter, in that? There was some slapsticky shit
right.
in there.
Where
he was still slick,
but he was still playing like a guy who just like fucks everything.
So he's done the dancing thing like Travolta, and you know.
He's got the dancing ties too.
With Ryan Gosling, right? Like Ryan Gosling, if he's doing kind of like that slapstick acting, like he's acting too much to do it, where it would be like, all right, he's going to win an award for that. Nobody in Look Who's Talking is winning an award.
You never know.
He was in that
well, hey, we got Martin Scorsese and Ryan Gosling. You never know. This is an Academy Award winner for sure.
Yeah, Ryan Gosling doesn't look trustworthy enough. There's something like inviting and nice about Travolta that like he's very disarming. There's something that's not so nice about Ryan Gosling.
Ryan like Gosling. A serial killer
a little bit. Yeah,
you Ryan get like Gosling's a Bateman
give
vibe
you a couple
from
drinks and then hate fuck you when you get back to his place.
Right. I feel like it's like Keanu Reeves in that movie The Watcher where he's just trying to kill women but he's like right. really charming.
Yeah,
I did not see that movie.
Oh, definitely watch it.
So Mike, you're the expert on this.
Well, I don't know about expert, but I do always do at least two. So I don't know if you want me to waste the time on the one funny one that I have and then the one real one or not.
Oh, yeah. Because absolutely. Let's hear it all.
I did a whole specific type of casting for this. So I've been really into the show Cheers lately, like rewatching the old episodes because it's been on Netflix and I loved the show as a kid. And so because of the Christie Alley connection, it made me think you could do this whole cast, these top three, as a Cheers cast. So for James, I had Ted Danson.
I think I had Ted Danson at some, yeah, like if you could somehow do 35-year-old Ted Danson.
Right.
You Ted Danson from
de-age him like Marvel does.
Yeah, Marvel de-ages everybody. So this is Disney's Look Who's Talking.
Yeah, I'm never going to argue with Ted Danson. Roles? That's Ted Danson's great.
When we pick the roles on our show, we tend to like choose a movie because some of these actors have acted for 50 years. So you pick a movie like that version of this guy or that version of this guy. And I would say, you know, the Ted Danson Cheers version.
Oh, so you're doing like an all Madden team for your picks.
It happened to just kind of, probably the Christie Alley connection kind of, you know, clicked something off in my brain, but I thought it'd be funny. Ted Danson there. I had Shelley Long for the Christie Alley role. And then I thought for Mikey, it would be hilarious to have Coach. Did you ever watch Coach, Nicholas Colasanto? Yep. I thought he would be hilarious in that role.
Oh, so I thought you meant Craig T. Nelson.
Oh, no. I meant Coach from Craig T. Nelson's good, too. But I meant the character Coach from Cheers.
Yeah, the one that died before they brought Woody Harrelson in.
Exactly. Yeah. But I thought he would be funny as the voice. But anyway, my real choice for this is another guy from that era who I think had that kind of handsome, kind of disarming type of charm was Steve Gutenberg.
Oh, yeah, I see Steve Gutenberg.
This feels like a Gutenberg movie all day.
Mike, what happened to Steve Gutenberg? Where'd he go?
Apparently he went crazy.
He went crazy?
what I've heard.
He was just like in Ballers.
Oh, he was?
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was in a couple episodes of Ballers.
So you're the guy who's been watching Ballers.
Good show. What's that? Yeah,
I knew there was a reason they kept that show going. It's because Travis watches it.
I just saw it for the first time like 2 weeks ago, and it's kind of interesting, but not great.
Yeah,
I really want to like it because I like Audrey and I like The Rock, but it's just there's something a little too much.
Yeah,
about it.
You know, I miss out all the time when everybody at the water cooler is saying, "Hey, did you see Ballers last night?" And I just gotta walk away.
Ballers combo. Yeah. I'm just fascinated with that show from the perspective of the NFL lets them use actually licensed teams and say NFL when there's a bunch of shit happening, which is derogatory to the NFL a lot.
Guys, the role of Molly is next. Molly, originally played by Christie Alley. Drunk, who do you have for Molly?
She seems to come up a lot when we do these, but I don't care because it is what it is. I went with Zooey.
Zooey Deschanel?
I did.
Now, will she be wearing glasses without lenses?
Up every time.
What was that?
Will she have lenses in her glasses?
Yes.
Or she's just going to free lens it?
However she wants.
It doesn't matter.
She's going to be super adorkable. I can't wait.
Travis, Molly.
This one I had a really hard time with. I went back and forth a million times, and then I just kind of threw it away and said Rose Byrne.
Yeah, fair enough. She comes up a lot too, but I like it.
Which one's is Rose Byrne?
Neighbors.
I'm a big fan of her in general. She's gorgeous and hilarious.
Yeah, Jackie. Like the role of Jackie Q in Get Him to the Greek was one of my favorite things she's ever done.
Yeah.
Did you guys see Spy with Melissa McCarthy?
She's funny in Spy too.
She's freaking hilarious. That movie is so much funnier than anyone gives it credit for.
Yeah, Statham's in that. Hilariously. Statham is.
I'm telling you guys, Statham's a sleeper pick on this one. Mike, who do you have for Molly in the remake of Look Who's Talking?
I kind of stayed in the 80s genre since I went Steve Guttenberg, and to match up with him, I went with Kathleen Turner.
Oh,
that would absolutely work. There, at her peak, they were kind of very similar. Yeah. Her and Kirstie.
Similar kind of at the time. They both peaked right around the same time, exactly. And Kathleen Turner, although now comes across a little masculine, was amazing at the time.
Can I tell you, speaking of Kirstie Alley in this role and peaking, this is not my favorite Kirstie Alley flick. My favorite Kirstie Alley flick is her starring opposite of John Larroquette in a movie called The Madhouse.
I don't think I've seen that.
Yeah. I've never seen that, but I love Larroquette.
Track it down. It's these two kind of yuppie-ish, like they're married, they're kind of a yuppie-ish couple, and I think all their relatives come to visit. And start to like make them go crazy. And then it's like the quintessential 80s storyline where, oh, they're not going to make it through this. And then they, you know, find their love at the end.
I'll have to find that on the torrents.
Yeah, that'll probably be flipped horizontally on YouTube or something.
Yeah, that movie, torrent away, Matt.
Okay. Guys, I realized that all I'm doing is putting the actors from Crank in a different movie. But, I went with Amy Smart for the role of Molly.
One of her best roles.
Crank?
Yeah. Over that newspaper stand. Amazing.
Did she ever do another movie after that?
I don't know. She kind of went away for a while, Mike. I'm bringing her back. I'm going to Tarantino Amy Smart. I'm gonna bring her back.
Yeah, she started in Road Trip, right? And she was pretty good in that. That movie was hilarious.
I mean, have you ever just said, man, Amy Smart really called that one in?
I'll give her
Butterfly Effect, you know, maybe.
Yeah, Butterfly Effect wasn't bad. She wasn't bad in that, but I think that she gives it her all. I just don't know that she has the
too much to give
talent. Yeah. I think that's more. I don't think it's a lack of effort. I think it's a lack of ability.
Loved her in Just Friends.
Also in Outside Providence, she was great.
I didn't see that. I did see Just Friends, and that's another movie that
Matt.
It's funnier than you would think, but it's still not funny.
Matt, Molly, who do you have for Molly?
So I went with Anne Hathaway.
Fair
enough.
Anne Hathaway.
Matt, I'm going to be honest with you.
Who
was
your
Anne Hathaway?
James? Who was your James again?
Paul Rudd. It's Paul Rudd.
Oh, yeah, that totally works.
Paul Rudd and Anne Hathaway.
You don't like Anne Hathaway?
I don't like her. I don't like her. I've never liked her.
I didn't
her in
like
anything.
Her for a long time. She's grown on me, though.
Yeah.
Since she was Catwoman, she's kind of grown on me.
I think it is her face. She has
There is something about her face.
She has a stupid face.
Smug face that Anne Hathaway.
You think you're better than me?
Yeah.
You think you're better than me, Anne Hathaway?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she is.
Well, of course. I like that movie she did. Who played opposite of her? Did she have like MS or something? She's like a pharmaceutical salesperson.
Oh, yeah, Love and Other Drugs with
Love and Other Drugs.
Gyllenhaal. Love that movie.
Oh, it was Gyllenhaal? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's a great flick.
So the big one was actually the big one is Mikey, the voice of Mikey. Why do you Matt? Are you nervous about this one? Man, what's the problem?
I'm nervous.
Okay, you go first then. I want to hear.
You want me to go first?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm super excited about this, guys, by the way. As soon as Drunk mentioned mentioned that he wanted to recast this movie immediately, and I'm fucking jazzed.
You jazzed, Travis?
So,
I'm fucking jazzed, baby.
I have a couple of picks here. He's got a lot of experience doing voice acting.
Okay. Is it Tim Allen?
The film Nine Lives, Kevin Spacey.
Oh, God, Matt.
Can he record this from his Matt, home in upstate New York?
We can't cast Kevin Spacey anymore, Matt.
It's not Kevin Spacey. I actually went Kevin Hart. She has a black baby. Anne Hathaway has a black baby, and Kevin Hart is the voice.
Oh, see? Now I almost want to change mine.
I was going to do
I didn't know we could
do
that.
A gay couple.
Yeah, because I wanted a what's that Hannibal Buress. But then I was like, Hannibal Buress can't be the baby.
But he can be the baby because Hannibal Buress can be anything he puts his mind to, Mike.
I guess. Yeah. Travis, the role of Mikey.
Travis's Mikey, originally played by Bruce Willis in the 1989 classic Look Who's Talking, is I'm recasting that as Jason Mantzoukas.
That's good.
Jason Mantzoukas, Rafi from The League. He's done some voices. Big fan of Jason Mantzoukas. His voice is ridiculous. He's ridiculous. Jason Mantzoukas is my Mikey.
That's a pretty.
I like the pick of Jason Mantzoukas. I like that a lot. I actually fun little tidbit. Went to a Christmas party this past year with his father.
No, you didn't.
Sure did.
How is his dad? Is his dad like kind of loud?
No, not at all.
Does he have an egg allergy like his kid?
I don't know if he has an egg allergy. He's a quiet man.
Guys, the role of Mikey, I went with John Malkovich.
I like that.
A John Malkovich baby.
I do like John Malkovich.
But if you did John Malkovich, did you do him doing the Russian accent from Rounders?
That's better. Yeah.
I think that you'd have to go that direction.
Inexplicably Russian for no reason at all.
Well, maybe not inexplicably. I mean, who knows who the dad is?
Yeah.
Yeah, is that how it works?
I mean, if he's got a Kevin Hart baby, she's got a Kevin Hart baby. I think she can have a Russian baby.
Right.
She's
that makes sense. Can. Yeah. Matt is kind of opened the door to all kinds of new possibilities.
I think Madea would be a good Mikey.
I also thought Jack Nicholson would be funny.
I like Jack too.
That's not bad. Drunk. The role of the baby drunk.
So I went with the my personal favorite cartoon actor going right now, and that would be H. John Benjamin.
Is that Archer?
Nice. That'd be Archer. That'd be Bob from Bob's Burgers.
He's not taking over for Ving Rhames doing the Arby's commercials.
He is taking the Arby's commercials.
We need to tell him to stop it. Ving Rhames.
I do love
Arby's commercials.
Voice.
Are my favorite.
I do too. He also played. Did he play the can of beans in Wet Hot American Summer?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And guys, last but not least, Mike from the Recasting Couch podcast. What's the link to get that? You got a website, Mike?
Yeah, it's the recastingcouch.com is the website. You can hit find us mostly on Twitter at recastingpod. We're on pretty much every major podcatcher or whatever. You can get our podcast anywhere you get podcasts.
And do you release your show regularly?
Once a week.
It's evergreen, Matt. It's evergreen because you can scroll back months and months and months and find a movie that you like.
Yeah.
We've done about 80 movies, and we've done, I don't know, 7 or 8 or 9 or so non-movie specific episodes as well.
Cool. Yeah, I'm definitely going to check you guys out.
Please do. Hope you enjoy it. So my choice, I have a couple as well. My first one is another guy from the 80s who both was known as kind of an actor, funny guy, but also had a TV cartoon series. Like, I don't know if you guys remember, Bruce Willis had a TV cartoon series at the same time.
Lil Bruno.
Right. Exactly.
That's a real thing.
Oh, it's a real thing.
Yeah, Bruce Willis spawned off. He put out those couple of albums, and he was known as Bruno as his singer alter ego, and then he put out a cartoon called Lil Bruno.
Why have I never heard of this, guys?
Ridiculous.
Oh, you can go to YouTube and see it.
Is it L-I-L Bruno?
Even for 80s cartoons, it's pretty awful.
Not good.
Oh, this is my new favorite thing. I can already tell. So he does the voice.
So the guy that he does the voice of Little Bruno.
That's great.
So the guy that I picked, who also had a TV show that was equal, or a cartoon that was equally as bad, by the way. But I had Howie Mandel.
Bobby's World.
Yeah.
Bobby's World.
That's not the Bobby greatest don't of, know. Of
cartoon viewing from the 80s. There's better.
Now, 89, this would have been right around the time that he put out Little Monsters, right? Because I think that was 88, 89.
Yeah, I love that movie. That's great. A fun movie. Yeah.
It holds up, too. Kids these days love it, especially the scene where they make that bully kid drink piss and eat cat food.
I played that movie for my two oldest a little early. I didn't remember. It was like, I didn't really dawn on me like, oh, monsters under your bed, scary looking kind of things. So it was a little early. I was like 5 years old, I think, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, that's it's a little bit.
Dark movie.
Thankfully, my oldest, my son, doesn't buy into any of that shit. He knows it's all fake. So it didn't really bother him too much. But
even when you see the back of boy's head at the end and it's all like worms and shit.
Yeah, that was probably the harshest part. That was probably the harshest part, but thankfully by that point in the movie, he kind of had lost interest. You don't really keep a five-year-old's interest for a full movie.
No, you don't.
Shell in the chat says that Howie Mandel was her favorite pick of all of them. So,
sweet. Oh, nice
job. Shell. Pick of approval.
My other that I just think would be hilarious for that role, it was I'd love to see, and it kind of reminded me of Bruce Willis, is Sylvester Stallone. I think that would be a hilarious accent to hear coming out of a baby.
I feel like that probably exists on the internet already as somebody dubbing Sylvester Stallone right into Mikey's mouth.
Travis, honestly, I really hope it does.
Do you want to hear Matt Leroy's from the chat? He had Chris Pratt as the dad, Ryan Reynolds as the baby, and Amy Schumer as the mom.
I'm not going to lie. I did toy around with Chris Pratt before settling with Paul Rudd.
Yeah. I don't think you're ever wrong by putting Chris Pratt in anything.
Looking at IMDb today, because I wanted to do my due diligence on Look Who's Talking recasting. Look Who's Talking's only got a 5.8 out of 10 on IMDb for ratings by like viewer ratings. That's ridiculous to me.
I felt that movie was beloved, wasn't it?
Was it not? It spawned 2 or 3 sequels, of course.
I think it was beloved by us dumb kids.
Yeah, I was going to say, we have found that movies that made a lot of money are not necessarily any good the course of doing our podcast.
I love Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as a kid. That fucking cartoon sucks. It's not good.
Yeah, but the movie's great. Casey Jones just fucking...
Oh, the movies are great, yeah.
When I was... Casey Jones, he just straight up kills Shredder in the back of a garbage truck at the end of that movie.
When I was a teenager, one of my favorite movies was The Chase with Charlie Sheen.
He fucks Christy Swanson while they're driving.
Travis, I watched that movie as an adult, and I was a stupid kid, man.
Terrible.
I was a stupid-ass kid.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that we liked as kids where you go back, although some of it holds up. I don't know if any of you guys have kids. I've got a bunch of little ones. And so I've kind of gotten back into seeing movies because the only thing they make now are god awful, horrible, like little kid shows and cartoons. There's no like, there's not that like 80s PG kind of not dumbed down for kids, but kid accessible movies like a Back to the Future or something along those lines. And so you go back and you watch and I've been kind of going through a lot of that old canon, and I found that some of them hold up enough to be able to watch as a family. The most recent one I think we watched as a family was Flight of the Navigator. You ever see that?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's one of those movies where you can watch with the whole family. It's not dumbed down or stupid. It's kind of funny. Like, they don't make movies like that anymore. It pisses me off to no end because I have a bunch of kids and I can't like go to a movie and actually – I made this observation the other day that the live action movies have gotten way dumber and the cartoon movies have gotten way smarter. It's kind of weird how that's worked.
I don't think we're allowed to really grow up anymore. Like as we get older, we're just hanging on to things and animated films are bigger than they've ever been. People love to go watch animated films and they're smart animated films. And then like the action films, like you said, that are stupid are all of these nostalgic cash grabs. So, yeah, I feel you there.
Well, guys, we did it.
Look Who's Talking coming to theaters the 2020, right?
The WFOD remake. If you listen to this, if you think about it, why don't you reach out to us on the social media. Tell us which one of us did it the best.
Hey, or your choices for your recasting.
Right. Mike, it was a pleasure talking to you. Nice meeting you.
If you liked this episode and what you guys did here, check out our podcast because that's what we do
right
every week.
Yeah, and it's deep, man. It's a deep dive on those. I
you gotta love movies.
Really enjoying it. Yeah,
deeper than we're willing to go.
Right. So, guys, that's it.
Hey, happy podcast month.
Happy podcast
inaugural month. 2019 podcast month episode.
Right. If there's somebody, if you listen to us and there's another podcast that you also are a big fan of and you want to hear them collaborate with the boys, let us know, because podcast month is going all month long, guys.
There's nothing better than when a couple of your favorite podcasts can cross over. You know?
Right.
Like Alien versus Predator one, you know. Great.
That's right.
Guys, coming up after the break, Spooky Dan talking
Spooky
about
Dan.
His movie Sleigh Bells. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Bruno the Kid. Get it on home video.
Und dann the party!
Bruno the Kid, O-U-T.
From Family Home Entertainment.
Now, back to good, wholesome, politically correct entertainment. Oops, wrong station.
If you want your Affliction shirts back, you gotta come get them. Strangelabel.com.
I think we're ready to reopen the park.
This is the sixth time now, and every time fuck-ups, find a way.
Oh, but this time it's different. Welcome to Jurassic Park.
You monster, what have you done?
This is just, looks like a Caesar's palace. Where's the dinosaurs?
Oh, don't you worry about that. We have them, you bet. But we've abandoned the whole zoo dynamic. That has failed, like you said, like 5 times now. Now we're rebranding and branching out into a whole new venture into the world of competitive sports.
So they race?
Yeah, they race, they fight. People gamble on all kinds of shit.
And this is all safe?
Well, we'd like to think so. I mean, shit, we have all the electric fences and stuff, we always do. It's just hard to keep dusting off the same flawed logic without changing something.
You didn't make new super hybrid predator dinosaurs again, did you?
Of fucking course we did. Are you shitting me? But it's different this time. They're racing. Trust me.
WFOB!
To Addie's text. What should I do?
Be chill.
What?
Send her an emoji.
Okay, be cool.
Welcome to the secret world inside your phone.
Woo-hoo!
Where emojis like me work and live. Here, each of us does one thing, and we have to nail it every time.
Incoming text!
All right, we're a go for eggplant.
Poop me?
Be yourself, man. Four, nobody's ever sent an three, eggplant and meant two, eggplant. Embrace the dick, man. Go!
What is that?
I've got to get this phone fixed.
This has never happened before. And now Alex has made an appointment to wipe out his phone.
If Alex deletes the phone, our whole world gets wiped out.
I'm not going to run away from this. I made a mistake, but I'm going to fix it.
The Emoji Movie.
No.
I'm positively euphoric right now.
Express yourself.
The pinnacle of beauty and sensuality.
Once again, WFOD. Wheelbarrow full of dicks.
Yeah.
Guys, welcome back. Our guest tonight is the writer-director of a new horror film called Sleigh Bells. It's available now on demand. For more information, check out SpookyDan.com. Guys, Spooky Dan is on the program.
This is your first feature film. You've been in the business a pretty long time, though, right? You started off doing like practical effects, and you moved into other things.
Really, you know what? I went to college for practical effects, and I moved out to California right when practical effects was kind of ending. In that moment after Jurassic Park and the Hulk came out, and everyone was like, "Forget practical; everything has to be CG." So I quickly kind of moved over to that side of stuff, and now practical effects is like a fun hobby on the side. But I have a soft spot in my heart for it. I still love that stuff.
There's a little bit of a resurgence, though, right? I mean, I know there's a lot of people like myself who grew up in the 80s who, you know, everything that I want is I want practical effects. Obviously, CG, you know, can help practical effects along a little bit. But I feel like now that there's a whole generation of filmmakers now coming up and they're like, man, we got to harken back to those days of HBO movies. You know, the practical effects that I saw, you know, every afternoon on HBO and the movies that I loved. Are you seeing that?
Yeah, you know, a couple things come to mind. There's no matter how great they can make the Hulk look in the Avengers movies, he still is an animated character. And I think that uncanny valley thing that happens in all of our brains knows it. And even though they're dynamic and amazing and super well executed, we still have this visceral thing that's no different than watching Zoe Bell, I think her name was, on the hood of the car in Grindhouse. Like, you feel it. You know they're there. You know it's real. And there's a weight to practical effects that just so far in CG can't quite be replicated. We're very close. Things like Where the Wild Things Are, I think, got it really right, where you do a practical body and then enhance parts of it.
Right. So
there are ways to make it really work well if you have that kind of budget. But to me, I'm like you guys, grew up in the 80s, and there's just something special about a guy in a suit. And as dumb as that sounds, there is something cool about it. And, you know, when we decided to make a movie with Krampus, right from the get-go, it was like, all right, I've done visual effects for years. I don't want visual effects in this movie.
Was practical effects like your passion? I mean, does that come from like an art background, or did you just want to get into movies somehow and that seemed like the thing to do?
A little bit of both. I think just being fascinated with the magic of special effects growing up, and like Fangoria was my Bible, you know, like when it showed up, you would read it cover to cover multiple times and just study how did they rip that guy's jaw off and make it look really great. You know, how do you do that with special effects in your backyard? And then that grew on to going to school. And, you know, Savini, I went to the Art Institute of Pittsburgh before Savini had his own school because Savini was on the board of directors. That was the reason I picked that school. But it was really from my love of horror. Just that's where I was like, this is where I want to spend all my time. And I kind of did for it. I still have time to, at least.
And then when practical effects kind of took a nosedive, and then you got into digital effects. Did you never really get into it? It was just something to do to survive, I guess. Is that accurate? It's kind of like the coal miners. They want to dig coal, but they tell them all to learn to code. So I guess they don't really want to code, but it's something to keep
you know,
in the game.
Honest truth is this. And this is actually a little more normal today by today's standards, but, you know, I would make these short films and I was at a public access station. So I had a little, like, it's embarrassing now, but at the time it was cool. But it's basically, I had a Goth Talk type TV show where I interviewed Nine Inch Nails and Marilyn Manson and played music videos. But because I knew the editing software at the early stages of when editing had switched from film to digital, I was able to quickly transition into visual effects. It was actually like, you knew enough about Photoshop, you knew enough about editing, it sort of bit of both worlds, and I was able to kind of jump into visual effects. And even to this day, because my wife is a visual effects supervisor, she works on tons of big stuff, and all of our horror friends, you know, they're constantly asking Tammy or I, one of us, to like, I need to take you to dinner so I can pick your brain about how I'm going to pull off these shots. Just because it's just sort of ingrained in you. You know, to this day, I'll take a little job here and there and help out friends and with visual effects. It's a fun world to be in. And what's fascinating to me, and sorry for rambling, but, you know, in the 80s, you spent all of your time and money on pre-production. So for a movie like The Dark Crystal, you would spend a year building all that stuff and you'd have your crew stay and everything. And now it's just the opposite. You spend all of your time in post-production so that you can get everything just right and just fix it there. And it's just, it's the same thing, just sort of at a different perspective. But again, I think for those of us that grew up in that era and now see like the benefits of both practical and visual effects, the digital style one, it's a really exciting moment in time that we're in.
Yeah, we have come a long way from that really disorienting blood splatter that they used, you know, that they used at the beginning of computer visual effects, where, you know, instead of actually using the practical swip,
yeah.
I think it's so jarring, and I think they did it in Die Hard, maybe 4. I think 4 was the first one that obviously other movies had done it, but man, it just took you completely out of the moment when you're watching this movie. It's like, well, there's like a computer generated mist just kind of shot out of this guy, and it's like it really does take you out of it. But
Travis might have just put his foot in his mouth. Did you work on Die Hard 4?
Well, I was gonna say, I have a funny story about Die Hard 4. So I worked on Die Hard 4, and I don't remember specifically doing blood effects. I was never a particle guy. That would be a particle department, but
cut that out, Mike.
No, it's fine. It's actually kind of funny. So while I was working on Die Hard 4, you would spend, let's say, I don't know, 8 to 25 hours on a shot. And when you get it close to ready, you would hit render, and the computer would have to do its thing for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and you'd wait and do nothing and just, you know, surf the internet. So at that moment in time, all I did was I kept hitting render before I should. So I would go and write an article for Bloody Disgusting. And about halfway through that movie, I realized, wow, my heart is not in visual effects the way it once was, because all I care about is, you know, writing for Bloody right now.
That's crazy. And you guys can bond that you both got mad at digital effects because of Die Hard 4.
Yeah, and you know, it had nothing to do with the movie. It just had everything to do with like sort of following your heart where you know you are, where you're supposed to be. That's one of the interesting things, whether you're in Hollywood or whether you work in a regular, you know, like a 9-to-5 punch the clock accounting job. If you know where you're good and you know where your heart is leading you, like, follow that. Take that as soon as you can. And that's exactly what I did. So that was sort of my entry into professionally working in horror outside of visual effects, but being like the horror guy for a really long time.
So this is your first feature, like Mike had said, but this is something you conceived years ago, right? This has been a long journey to get this, to get Sleigh Bells made and released.
Yeah, it was one of those first-timer problems of, I found the money, we have the script, everything was going great, we shot the movie, in, I think, 14 days, something very minimal, and I was like, we're going to have it out by the end of the year, and then we're out of money, and then post-production still needs to happen. So then it was a matter of, you know, taking jobs to get the money to get the things that needed to happen. And so what I thought was going to be a six-month turnaround from the last day of shooting ended up being damn near 5 years. So it was a long journey on my part, and because honestly, this is something you hear from a lot of filmmakers, and it's heartbreaking when it happens, but you see your first cut of the movie and it sucks. And you're like, I'm a failure. What do I do? And the answer is, you fix it. You go back and you pick what you need to fix and get it as right as you can. So I can honestly say, you know, there are parts of Sleigh Bells I'd love to have different, but for the most part, I think as soon as we get to Santa's Village, the movie is fun from that point on. Up to that point, it's a little like, oh, I wish it was a little tighter, a little better, but it's a fun movie. And the best part about Sleigh Bells now that it's done and finished and people are seeing it, is with almost all the reviews, even the bad ones, they all kind of praise that, like, oh, well, he did comedy the way that he was trying to do it. There's no questioning. So, like, I tried to make a silly, culty movie, and I think I accomplished that.
Right. I guess at the end of the day, if they say that it looks like everybody had fun and you made the movie you wanted to make, then, it's not really a criticism. I'm not a giant horror guy. Travis is much more the horror guy than I am. I enjoyed the movie. It was great. It's a fun movie. And, Barry Bostwick's in it. He's playing Santa. He looks like he's having a blast. I was really excited to see Bull from Night Court. I don't know the guy's name, but Bull from Night Court's in it.
Martin Mull's in it?
His name? Didn't do my research on this from Night Court, Travis. Everybody knows who I'm talking about.
It was kind of funny. I went to a horror film festival in Big Bear, California, and Richard Mull happens to live nearby there. So when we met him, he was like, yeah, come shoot a movie up here. I'll be in it for free. So of course we're like, oh yeah, we're going to shoot a movie up there. Let's call Richard Mull. And of course he wasn't for free, but he did live around the corner. So we got him in the movie for a couple of days, which was really nice. And it would have been cool if we had him a little more. He really wanted to be Santa Claus, but we had already cast Barry Boswick. But, you know, happily cast Barry.
Oh, absolutely.
But he would have been great in that part too, you know.
His accountant got a hold of him and told him to stop volunteering to be in movies for free.
Yeah, probably. But I mean, here's the reality. This sort of the sad truth of where we're at today is if you get someone of his stature or bigger show up for a couple of days, they're not making a fortune. So their manager is not getting rich off of these independent horror movies.
Right.
We could make them rich. I wish we had the budget to make people rich, myself included, for that matter.
So do you have, I mean, you've had a couple of years where this one has been, where you've filmed it and it's done, but you couldn't get it quite done. Have you done anything since then? Have you got more things in the can that we can look forward to?
Well, I did a bunch of visual effects last year for a bunch of, for the Christine McConnell show on Netflix.
Oh, you worked on that? That show's great.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I did the opening title sequence for that.
Oh, nice.
I am a huge, because of my practical background, I'm a huge fan of puppetry. So when the call came in, it was like, it's a spooky Martha Stewart show and there's Jim Henson puppets. I was literally like bouncing off the walls excited. I'm like, you people, you have to come over to my house and see. You'll understand why I'm so excited about this. This is like my world. I love it. So it was kind of a match made in heaven. I hope we get to do another season. I haven't heard yet if there has been, but fingers are crossed right now for that. That show is a lot of fun, even if it is a bizarre show.
It really is. I think that's why it's my cup of tea. It's like it's not like really anything that I've seen in recent history. Do you have anything? You've made your first feature. Are you interested in directing again? Would you? Was it a good experience? You want to tackle it again?
I have the exact stock answer you want to hear, which is I have four different projects I'm developing right now and looking for one, whatever is next. This is a kind of an interesting thing to me, at least, is as a director, you get, let's say, a couple weeks to a couple months on set to work as a director, and then you have a lot of posts.
Right.
But in real life, if you guys are podcasters, how many shows have you done to this point? You know?
This is 388, I think.
Okay. Hundreds. You have hundreds of hours of experience of doing this. And if you go back to your first episode, you're probably cringe at how unsophisticated it is compared to now that you just know second nature. And it's a weird sort of thing being a director, or a producer's a little better because you're still a little hands-on for a longer amount of time. But as a director, I just want to work. You know, so if a Lifetime movie came across my desk, I would be more than willing to look into it. I can't get that in my head, then I can't. But for the most part, like, directing is directing. I want to get more experience.
Yeah, so just get that experience, right?
I want so much to see Dean Cain starring Lifetime movie directed by Spooky Dan.
He's in all of them, I think.
I wish. him, and if we can get Lacey Chabert and,
we got to get Danica McKellar.
Yeah, there's another couple. Oh, Danica would be nice. We can get, like, the holy trio of all the big... And again, I've got some Christmas experience. We can make it a Christmas romantic comedy where they're still around the loop somewhere. Let's develop this as we're talking, guys.
Spooky Dan's Lifetime movie that is essentially the Expendables of all of the Lifetime movies.
I've been talking with some friends. I did a podcast where literally they give you the setup for a Christmas romantic comedy and you as a writer figure out where the story is going because they're just so predictable.
Oh, absolutely.
That's the whole point of the podcast. So it was a lot of fun doing that. And, you know, we were talking about, like, you know, I wonder if there is a way to make these kind of fun because there's clearly a market out there. But I think, 80 of them were made this year alone or the past year alone just for Hallmark, Lifetime, and Fox Family. 80 different Christmas romantic comedies were made. 2018.
Well, I know one of those stations does like an entire month, and it's not December. I think is it like August or July where they literally play, and like I think it was either a couple times a week or like literally one a day brand new Christmas movies that they had put out. I swear I saw that this year.
We certainly have enough.
See, that's the thing about Christmas movies is they're really only shown at Christmas time, but they are showed every Christmas time. Like and so yeah, I mean you just kind of enter the Christmas churn, and then every Christmas people, yeah. Hey, it's time for Christmas movies. Let's get out that Kurt Russell one that he's driving the Santa taxi. That's what we watch now every Christmas. We watch the Kurt Russell Santa taxi movie.
It's fascinating in 2019 right now. Like, if we put a movie out today, let's say we put out like a monster, like a swamp monster movie. We've got about a 3-week window of where it matters to people, where they're talking about it. And then another 3 weeks to a couple months of just, you know, still pushing it and marketing it. And then your movie is done and it's a catalog title. So you have this 6 to 8 week window, and that's kind of it. The nice thing about Christmas is I only have a 4-week window, but I get to repeat it every year for 4 or 5 years.
Well, and I watched Sleigh Bells in late January, Dan, and I enjoyed it just the same. It's set in Christmas time.
Yeah.
There's a Santa Claus and a Krampus in it, but I mean it was fun anyway, guys. So you see Spooky Dan's movie in February, you'll still enjoy it, I think. So it's sleighbellsmovie.com. Follow Spooky Dan on Twitter at Spooky Dan. It's on demand. It's on your Amazons and your iTunes or whatever. We'll link to it and all our stuff too. So,
thank you.
Yeah, Dan, we appreciate you doing it, and hopefully next time you have something coming out, we can do it again.
All right, and keep me in mind when you guys want to do the Expendables of Christmas
romance. Absolutely,
together, spider room going.
I got an outline for this.
Start on that.
I got an outline for the script ready to go already, so you'll be hearing from me.
All right, cool. I'll call my lifetime friends, and we'll make this happen. But please add blood somewhere. We gotta mix it up just a little.
Absolutely.
It's right in the title that I'm thinking of. We'll do this off air. We don't want anybody to take it from us.
Good.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it, buddy.
Well, thanks, Dan.
Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate it.
Take care. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Travis, I like Spooky Dan.
I'd like to talk to him like when he's not driving a car. You know what I mean? Like when he's sitting and we can just... Because he seems like he's got... I mean, he's worked on shit for decades. And I just can't even imagine the stories. And I mean,
That's so funny that you brought up Die Hard 4. And like, I had just looked at his IMDb and I knew that he worked on a Die Hard. I just didn't know which one.
that was the one. Well, you know, I had a point to make. My whole point was that the blood splatter, like when they first started using it, like computer generated shit, looked terrible no matter what they did. And it was that was a blockbuster movie and it looked like shit. But now my point was going to be that now, like, they're able to like seamlessly kind of do some of that CGI stuff and it actually doesn't completely distract you from whatever the hell you're watching. But I'm happier that I didn't get to my point and you just interrupted me to tell me he worked on Die Hard 4.
Well, I didn't want you to really insult the man, Travis. He was our guest. you know what the worst goddamn effects I ever saw was?
You know, and Die Hard was the only thing I could think of. Die Hard 4 was the only thing I could think of. And I know there are worse cases of it. Like, I know there are. Like, the first season of The Walking Dead, the blood splatter, that's terrible.
It's a TV movie.
Yeah, well, yeah, I know. But, I mean, there's other movies that, like, had worse blood. But Die Hard 4 is the one that stuck in my head because they originally shot it as a PG-13.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was PG-13 in theaters, but then they put out
an R-rated version
for the DVD that was way better.
It was way better, but there was more of that fake ass looking blood splatter.
Yeah, and you know, I think I enjoyed the PG-13 Die Hard 4. I liked Die Hard's 1 and 3 and 4, but there's been some clunkers. I didn't think 2 was very good, and I didn't think that the last one that they were in Russia was very good. But
2 is not great just because it's so different. I still like 2 and yeah, the Jai Courtney Die Hard in Russia. I remember what, cause I loved Live Free or Die Hard. I thought the Timothy Olyphant villain was really good.
Yeah.
And, I went to the theater by myself to watch, cause I love Die Hard. So I like watching this Jai Courtney one and I'm like, not even a quarter way through it. I'm like, oh no,
I got a hot take for you, Travis, but I think I enjoy Die Hard 3 more than I enjoy Die Hard 1.
Oh, With a Vengeance is great.
With Simon Says and all that. I think Jeremy Irons is great in that movie. And I mean, wasn't it supposed to be a Lethal Weapon movie? Didn't we do a whole thing about the...
We did, where they co-opted a different script or a story and made it a Die Hard movie.
Yeah, like Die Hard 5 is the first Die Hard that was written to be a Die Hard.
Yeah, and it happened to be the worst one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a Die Hard with a Vengeance, too. Like, even the opening, where it's like the hot time, summer in the city, and like the banks and shit, everything's blowing up. Like, that's a great opening sequence.
Well, that thing about how we're seasoned podcasters, I guess, you know, it came across, you know, Travis, with our professionalism.
He could just
tell that, like, you know, we're really good at this.
Well, and, you know, when he talked about, you know, how many times you've done it, I guess if you really think about it, you know, when you put in hundreds of hours of something, you have no option but to be better.
Yeah. So, I mean, compared to...
What's the Malcolm Gladwell thing? Is it you can't be good at anything until you practice 1,000 hours or something?
I don't know.
Or maybe it's 10,000. I don't know.
Yeah. I think we still need some work, Travis.
We're always working.
We still have our faults, you know.
We're grinding it out.
So, guys, that's the show. We appreciate y'all coming out. We'll do it again next week. You know, we'll do it again next week, right?
We'll definitely do it again next week, barring you know, some unforeseen circumstances. But in the meantime, watch Sleigh Bells, support Spooky Dan.
Yeah, sleighbellsmovie.com. Follow Spooky Dan on Twitter at Spooky Dan. Hey, do us a solid there and tell Spooky Dan you heard him here and that you liked it. It was good.
Go ahead and feel free to tell him I was wrong about the blood splatter in Die Hard 4 and you really enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's it. That's my mama.
Guns out, sun's out.
I want you to know it's over.
Well, bye.
Thank you for listening to this installment of WFOD. Join us live every Tuesday night at 9, 8 Central on strangelabel.com. Be sure to check out all the other great shows that station offers. You can download past episodes of our lengthy catalog or enjoy other premium content on our website found at WFODshow.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at WFODix. Email us Mike, Travis, or Drunk at WFODshow.com. Give us a call when we're live or when we're not live. Phone over there is 636-487-HAND. Special thanks, as always, to our Patreon sponsors, Liquid Lozenge, Harry Balzania, and Brian Kranz. If you'd like to contribute, it's patreon.com/WFODix. We'll be back next week. Thank you, and goodbye.
Lots of good stuff happening. It's going to be juicy. You'll see. All right. Bye for now. Take good care of yourself. Bye.